Welcome to Poets Cafe on KPFK. We're doing a special show. I'm Suzanne Lummis. Our special show for Poets Cafe is going to focus on a poet, one of the most celebrated poets, certainly one of the most nationally known poets in the new anthology, Wide Awake, Poets of Los Angeles and Beyond. 112 poets are included. It came out this year from Beyond Broke Books. The imprint is called the Pacific Coast Poetry Series. And the poet I'm with today is Dana Gioia. And Dana Gioia has, this is, I think, Dana, your first time on KPFK down here in Southern California. Right, but you've been up north. You've been interviewed up on KPFK.
Yeah,
up north,
you know, this is the first time I've been in the building here. But up in Berkeley, I've done dozens of shows. In fact, one of my best friends up north is Jack Foley.
I know Jack
Foley. Cover to cover up there.
We all know Jack Foley down here too. He's an amazing figure. So I have a few pieces of information about Dana Gioia. His life, he has not followed the maybe more usual course that poets follow, the sort of straight to an MFA program and then straight to maybe assistant teacher, assistant professor or something. He has wandered far and wide, and his achievements have been rather extraordinary. He was born in Hawthorne, California, went to Stanford, Harvard. Then he worked for a long time, I think it might have been 15 years or so, at General Foods, and he wrote at night. Only time he had to write, I guess. And then, and I remember this vividly, this is actually a landmark in my life too. In 1991, the Atlantic Monthly, and it was a cover story, and on the cover it said, "Can Poetry Matter?" by somebody I think I had not heard of, Dana Gioia. But I remember calling the poet Charles Webb and saying, "Charles, you have got to read this. It's saying some of the things that we have been saying for a long time." And I was quite taken with it. Not everybody, but what made it famous was that it became so controversial. If everybody had just liked it and agreed with it, Dana, you can respond to this later and tell me if you think it's true after I finish your bio. Hope we have time to talk after I finish your bio. But I think if it hadn't been so controversial, if some people had not argued against it, it wouldn't have become so famous. Then Dana retired from General Foods, I believe, and you'll correct me if I'm wrong, and devoted himself to writing. He has many books of poetry, many books of criticism. He was for 8 years chairman of the National Endowment for the Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts flourished at that time. He is now the Judge Whitney Professor of Poetry and Public Culture at USC. He's also been a music critic for San Francisco Magazine, and that just scrapes the surface. Dana, did I get any part of that wrong, or would you like to adjust any of it add to it?
You got it all right. I mean, when people say I retired from business, it makes it sound as if, you know, I retired with a pot of money. What I did is I quit my job and decided I would make a living as a writer.
That scary.
That was a very bumpy career at first, but, you know, it worked. And so I began doing a lot of things that I had never done before. You know, because when you're writing at night, when you're writing at weekends, you know, you can get certain things done, but, you know, you're always sort of robbing Peter to pay Paul. Uh-huh. And so I just wanted to see, you know, what I could do if I had the time. And it was an education.
And were there any parts, any times in those first years that you felt you weren't sure if you could make ends meet? It's pretty tough to make a living as a writer unless you're a smash hit novelist or something.
It was tougher than I thought. Oh. And we had a couple of really, you know, lean years. But, you know, the fact is that I was very lucky, and a couple of the projects that I worked on, you know, came out. But basically, I worked all the time. I reviewed, you know, I edited books, I wrote, I got involved in broadcasting. I got an interesting little gig with BBC Radio where they needed an American arts correspondent. Mm-hmm. So I had five or six things going at once. And anybody who wants to make a living as a writer, my advice is that unless you are writing bestsellers that are then bought by Hollywood, what you're going to need to do is put lots of little jobs together. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some of them will work, some of them won't. But together, you know, they can, if you're lucky, you know, can pay your way.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things I know you're interested in talking about, and I'm interested in talking about, this anthology, Grand Passion, it's an exploration of Los Angeles through poetry. And by extension, it's in some respects, maybe California culture through poetry. And in so many ways, when I put it together, I was very aware that it would be a big cliche buster. People who've never been to Los Angeles and only know the images they see in the movies have maybe a very narrow or reductive sense of the city. But you grew up in Hawthorne. Remind me where Hawthorne is.
Well, you know, Hawthorne is over by the LA International Airport.
Ah.
You know, it was, when I grew up, and I think it still is kind of a tough working class uh-huh. town. Mm-hmm. You know, the only cultural institution that was in Hawthorne when I was there, you know, was the Hawthorne Public Library, which mm-hmm. was a great library. Mm-hmm. Now, I grew up largely with people who didn't speak English as their native language, but I never doubted, you know, what a cultural treasure Los Angeles was. I mean, the things that we were able to do just as kids with no money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there were incredible classical music things. We wanted to be musicians. We'd go to USC, you know, for opera, for symphony, for the Congress of Strings. You know, we could get last-minute tickets at the Shrine, at the Hollywood Bowl. And when I was just entering high school, they opened up the Music Center, where suddenly, you know, you had, you know, all sorts of things coming through. You had the Mark Taper Forum showing new plays, you know, with Gordon Davidson, incredible directing.
Yeah.
I mean, there were museums around.
Yeah.
And as long as you sort of knew the free days or you knew the system, you know, we had this incredible cultural capital that we were
in. Isn't it ironic that around the country there, and even at that time, they were describing Los Angeles as a place of no culture?
Well, when I went to New York, people would say, well, you know, I said, from LA, they go, oh, we're sorry for you. I said, why? I said, I had this, you know, this great education in just living public culture. I mean, even the writers that were here when I was a kid, Aldous Huxley was here, Christopher Isherwood, Ray Bradbury, you know, Robert Heinlein's American science fiction was being created in Los Angeles.
Writers.
You know, for music, Igor Stravinsky was actually a couple of miles from here, you know,
he
up in the Hollywood Hills.
Wow.
So, I mean, these people were all there. We would go to the Monday night concerts at LACMA, and it was really funny. We'd be there in about 2/3 of the audience would be speaking German. These were the refugees from Hitler, all these intellectuals and artists that came here. But I couldn't have imagined, for at least a poor kid, you know, poor kid, you know, without, you know, many advantages, a richer and more rewarding and inviting place than L.A. was in the 60s. Now, maybe it's a little different. I think L.A., as it's grown, it's become more crowded, maybe it's become, you know, less friendly. But, it was a good place to grow up. And I never, any time in my life, felt that I had been culturally disadvantaged from Los Angeles. I think I had an advantage.
It sounds like you were enriched. And also, you have to be motivated to go seek it out. I mean, there were probably other people down in Hawthorne who might have had that available to them, but you also have to look for it.
Well, of course.
You know, I sometimes run into people who say, they've never read poetry or they don't encounter poetry. And I wonder, how could you not encounter it? Everywhere I look, I see poetry. But it's sort of, it has to be in your sight. Like, you have to have your eyes open to something and your ears open to something.
Yeah. Well, we used to go to musical events. We also used to hang around bookstores. And L.A. was such a great bookstore town. Pickwick Books, Cherokee Books, over in Hermosa Beach, Either Or Bookstore. Now, we didn't know it, but probably one of the customers that was, you know, around us was Thomas Pynchon back then, who was living incognito in Hermosa Beach. But you know, it seemed to me that it was, there was a living culture. We would meet people, we would talk about books, people, you know, talk about poetry, we would go to poetry readings, and it was just already part of the local culture.
Now, how did you find your way to poetry? And I know you write literary criticism, you also write operate librettos, right? So you do a lot of different things, but I would say, would you agree you're best known as a poet?
You know, I am a poet. You know, I mean, very easy to explain my career. I'm a kid from a working class family who wanted to be a poet, but had to figure out how to make a living. And so I've done all of these other things to make a living so that I could write poetry and write about poetry. So, you know, when I was a teenager, I thought I wanted to be a musician. And all my friends were musicians. Mm-hmm. But we all read. We talked about books. We read poetry. And it was only when I was in, you know, about 19 or 20, I found myself writing lots and lots of poems.
This is Suzanne Lummis. You're listening to a special edition of Poets Cafe on KPFK. And my guest is Dana Gioia, one of 112 poets included in the anthology Wide Awake, Poets of Los Angeles and Beyond, which got, by the way, a lovely write-up by David Yulin in the Los Angeles Times Literary online feature, and Callista McRae, I hope I have her name right, on Los Angeles Review of Books, wrote a lovely thing about this anthology I edited. And Dana Gioia, who's been talking about his background growing up in Hawthorne, the richness of that cultural environment, the richness of Los Angeles at that time, how he left his job at General Foods and decided to do his best to make a living as a writer. Now, I think, Dana, we ought to hear at this point, people are going to be burning up to hear a poem or two. How about, and you can say anything, what do you want to read to us today?
Well, you know, when I was talking about Hawthorne, I neglected to mention that Hawthorne, when I was growing up, was the home of a great artist or a great artistic family. And they created a group called the Beach Boys.
Oh, yes.
And so I wrote a poem years later about, you know, just driving, you know, actually I was on a business trip. I was in a rental car and I heard a Beach Boys song come on the air. And this is about, you know, the memories it summoned up. Mm-hmm. It's called Cruising with the Beach Boys. Mm-hmm. So strange to hear that song again tonight, traveling on business in a rented car, miles from anywhere I've been before, and now a tune I haven't heard for years, probably not since it last left the charts, back in L.A. in 1969. I can't believe I know the words by heart, and can't think of a girl to blame them on. Every love-sick summer has its song, and this one I pretended to despise. But if I were alone when it came on, I turned it up full blast to sing along. A primal scream and croaky baritone, the notes all flat, the lyrics mostly slurred. No wonder I spent so much time alone, making the rounds in Dad's old Thunderbird. Some nights I drove down to the beach to park and walk along the railings of the pier. The water down below was cold and dark, the waves monotonous against the shore. The darkness and the mist, the midnight sea, the flickering lights reflected from the city. A perfect setting for a boy like me, the Cecil B. DeMille of my self-pity. I thought by now I'd left those nights behind, lost like the girls that I could never get, gone with the years, junked with the old T-Bird. But one old song, a stretch of empty road, can open up a door and let them fall, tumbling like boxes from a dusty shelf. Tightening my throat for no reason at all, bringing on tears shed only for myself.
I love that poem. No wonder I snapped it up for Wide Awake.
I should have explained that, you know, when I was in high school, no intellectual could possibly have admitted publicly that they liked the Beach Boys.
I remember that era. Yeah. I remember it would be very embarrassing. They were just so uncool.
Yeah, it was a love that dare not speak its name. But we all secretly loved the Beach Boys.
Anyway, how can you not
Years later, those are songs.
It was a secret shame. You're right.
Yeah, that really survived. I mean, I think what the Beach Boys did, and I think this is an important moment in California history, they expressed the kind of optimism of California in the 1960s.
Yeah.
This kind of joy.
Yeah.
My goodness, isn't it great to be here?
And it's a joy that's somehow associated with youth. The idea of youthfulness with the future stretching out before you and the sand and the surf and the light, the wide open spaces, a sense of no limitations, no barriers. I mean, it's this sort of Shangri-La. And I think when songs or poems touch upon that, we feel it as a loss of something, unfortunately.
Well, you know, also, but, you know, growing up in Hawthorne, there was no nature in Hawthorne. It was completely built environment and not very nicely built, I should add. You know, I love the place, but let's be honest about it.
Yeah.
But nature for us was the beach.
Right.
You know, we would go out to Hermosa Beach or Manhattan Beach or El Segundo, and we would just see the immense, mysterious Pacific. And what more do you really need to a certain degree when you're a teenager?
That about covers it. I want to talk about something else in that poem. I want to talk about the formal elements, because I know that sometimes, now and then, sometimes you are, sometimes you aren't associated with essays and pieces, arguments that encourage, if not a return to formal poetry, at least not a rejection of it, an embracing of it, an exploration of it. I was looking at that poem. I think you're doing something a little bit mysterious. It's an irregular rhyme scheme, right? Is it in blank? Is it in?
It's an iambic pentameter.
I hear the iambs in
there. It's an iambic pentameter, and it's quasi regularly rhymed. I mean,
so it appears and reappears.
I became an extraordinarily controversial figure in American poetry.
Which is the best thing that could happen for a poet.
I didn't intend to.
Believe me, I'm trying to figure out how can I be more controversial, but anyway, continue.
And it was because I write in about one-third of my poems are in free verse, about one-third of them are in meter, but no rhyme, and about one-third have rhyme and meter. And I just felt you should write the poem however the poem you think is going to come out the best. You know, how do you hear it? And people, when I started using rhyme, began to attack me as a fascist, as a reactionary, as an elitist. But, you know, I'll give you my perspective. Yeah, you know, I'm in L.A. I grew up in L.A., the world capital of popular culture. And the popular culture around me uses rhyme and meter in songs and things like this. Now, the funny thing is that the attacks on me kind of stopped in, you know, the late 90s when suddenly it became evident that the biggest new movement was hip hop, which was in rhyme and meter, you know, and that there actually is this kind of, you know, sort of a deep enjoyment, you know, forms. But, you know, I kind of like to use rhyme and meter in a way that surprises people. I very rarely use what you'd call fixed forms. You know, I like, to reinvent it. I don't want you to hear the rhyme coming until it gets you.
Villanelle, not to ever written a Sistina.
Well, I wrote one Sistina making fun of Sistinas. I didn't really publish a sonnet until I was 60. And even then, I reinvented the rhyme scheme. But anyway, you know, I like, very simple. For me, poetry is a musical art. I like the sound that you can make with words, the noises you can make with words. Because I think what I really like about it, that is, I think the noises, the sounds, the music operates on the audience in a subliminal, subconscious level. And I like a poem that simultaneously addresses the conscious mind and the physical body, the memory, the intuition, the unconscious mind.
You know what? It occurs to me this would be a good time to mention your piece that was published first in Dark Horse. Was it in Dark Horse first? And then again on Poetry Daily, which means everybody can go straight to their computer, just do a search on Dana Joya. We better spell your name, because they will not, if they don't know, who would spell it the way it's actually spelled, which is G-I-O-I-A, G-I-O-I-A, Dana. And then it's Poetry of Enchantment. Is that what it's called?
Yeah, Poetry as Enchantment.
Poetry as Enchantment.
And I relate poetry to music, to song, to magic. You know, I think one of the main purposes
of poetry is you
create a spell. And that when the reader or the listener enters that spell, they relax themselves. They release the guards that they put up around themselves all day, and it allows the poem and the listener to have a deeper transaction.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's a lot of the purpose of art, is to sort of make us relax ourselves, listen, and even listen to ourselves. You know, Franz Kafka has this wonderful quote. He says, "The book is the axe with which we break open the frozen seas within us."
Yeah.
And I like that, because I think there's a lot of frozen seas in our daily life.
Sometimes, I know that quote well. I love that quote. Sometimes, I have a certain argument with that quote. I think sometimes it takes an axe, and sometimes an axe is too blunt an instrument. It takes something a little, a subtler tool
to break the frozen.
But something has got to break the frozen seas within us, for sure. So I have something to say here at this moment, which is this. I am Suzanne Lummis, and you're listening to a special edition of Poets Cafe on KPFK. And my guest is Dana Gioia. Dana Gioia, who's had a rich and vivid history, chairman of the National Endowment of the Arts, and has written librettos and has written many books of poetry and criticism. And we're talking about his work and other works. So we're talking about his work in Wide Awake, Poets of Los Angeles and Beyond, the anthology I edited, which came out this year from the Pacific Coast Poetry Series. And Dana, I wanted to ask you something else, too, before we run out of time. Before we run out of time, I want to ask you something. But before even I get to that, I just wanted to mention that one of the things I find appealing about poetry is, in my understanding, that it was first manifested probably in incantations, spells, prayers, and calls to the unknown. I mean, I think the first poem was probably a deep cry out of the soul, possibly in a time of famine. But it was as you're saying, a kind of invocation, a magical uttering. And I think that is the ancestor of poetry. And when somebody made that sort of semi-inarticulate cry of the soul, it was the first poem. That's my story. Anyway, and I think there's some historical basis for it.
I think there's an irrefutable historical basis for it. I mean, if you go to ancient cultures, the word for poetry is the same as the word for song. The word for, you know, like in Latin, you take a word, carmen, which means a poem, a song, and also a magical incantation. You know, and so these things were the same, different aspects of the same thing in older cultures. And that memory still persists in our culture. I mean, you could almost put it in pop terms, which is that what a poem is trying to do is to put you in the zone.
Uh-huh.
Put you in a zone where your mind opens up, your imagination opens up, your emotions open up. And if a poem doesn't put you in the zone, it's just writing.
Yeah. I want to talk about Los Angeles today a little bit. So this anthology, Wide Awake, not every poem in it is about Los Angeles, because people in Los Angeles don't go around thinking about Los Angeles all the time. Do you go around thinking about Los Angeles all the time?
Probably. When I'm in traffic.
Yeah, right. And when I'm in traffic, I do. And then I'm sorry I'm in Los Angeles at that moment. There's all kinds of topics that are approached in here. But, of course, Los Angeles is a through line. But I want to ask you, what's Los Angeles need? I mean, people praise, we all come on here and sort of are boosters for Los Angeles. What does the Los Angeles poetry community, or as I call it, the bond, need, and what is it lacking?
Well, you know, Los Angeles is now the largest art center in the Western Hemisphere. There are more artists across all categories in Los Angeles than there are in New York. But, you know, in this great mix of things, I think poets, you know, feel as if they're in a kind of marginal or disadvantaged position, because we're dwarfed by the music industry, by film, by television. I think what the LA poetry scene needs is a couple of things, and this is actually why, I mean, you I don't think this will surprise me if you were to say this, why you're so important. First of all, LA needs a cultural memory in its, in a literary scene, in its poetry scene, a sense that this thing is, this enterprise of LA poetry has been growing now for three generations. And you are from, like it or not, you know, a significant historical family in the entire cultural history of Los Angeles that goes back to your grandfather, which I think is probably why you've become so important in this, is that you have this long view of LA literature. So I think we need to take a long view. I think we need to create a better sense of community. And we don't, we lack critics. You know, we lack people that are talking and arguing about things. And I think if we could, you know, develop a more critical consciousness that we take what we do so importantly that it's worth arguing about and talking about and revisiting. We're beginning to get the very first stirrings of this. But I think that's in general where California letters have always sort of been weaker. Now, San Francisco has gradually developed this, but LA, I think we're still pretty in, much in the beginning stages.
No, it's not here. It's not present, and it's not a lively force in LA the way it should and the way it needs to be. And when we say literary criticism, people hear that word. That's maybe one of the more misunderstood words, I think, in the literary lexicon. People hear the word criticism and they think it means tearing something up or setting yourself up as a as an arbiter or judge or something. I don't know. But it really means exploration, analysis, discussion, investigation. It means looking at either a single book or the whole of a poet's work, the whole of a writer's work, and figuring out how does this fit in to the other works? What does it mean to us? Where does its value lie? Where did the writer perhaps succeed in what he or she was trying to do? Where did they maybe fall short? And it can also set up a conversation with other literary critics and writers so that they, and if that level of discussion and exploration in writing is not going on, there's something very unsatisfying about it. You write a book and people say, "Oh, I love your book," or they don't say it either, whatever. But and it represents this big part of your life. But where's the deeper exploration?
Yeah, I mean, culture is a conversation, and the more lively, animated, inclusive, and intelligent that conversation is, the stronger the culture.
Yes. Well, I sure agree with that. And here's. Let's hope that 2016 will bring more interesting, provocative, and stimulating, rich, humorous, and serious literary discussion in Los Angeles. And an aspect of the discussion we've had here today is concerned the anthology that just came out and has received such lovely attention from people far and wide. And in fact, it's called Wide Awake, Poets of Los Angeles and Beyond, an anthology from Beyond Baroque Books' Pacific Coast Poetry Series, which I edited. I'm Suzanne Lummis, and my guest has been Dana Gioia. Look for the Poets Cafe fan page on Facebook. You've been listening to a special edition of Poets Cafe on KPFK 90.7 FM, Pacifica Radio for all of Southern California and beyond.